Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Neil McAlilly of the law firm of White and Case, representing the petitioners in this case, the City of Dania Beach, Florida, the City of Hollywood, Florida, Mrs. Yolanda Gernant, and Mr. Marco Salvino. This case is about the FAA's decision to approve a major runway extension at the Fort Lauderdale Airport. We recognize that environmental laws such as NEPA give federal agencies, as a general matter, great discretion in the choice of alternatives at the end of an environmental review process. However, in the case of major runway extensions or in transportation projects that use park lands, Congress has circumscribed that discretion. And in particular, where there is a major runway extension that would result in significant environmental impacts, FAA may not approve that plan if there is a prudent and feasible alternative that is available. The petitioners in this case challenge FAA's approval of alternative B1B, which I may at points refer to as the extension of the south runway at the airport, which the FAA admits causes significant environmental impacts, because there was another alternative, alternative C1, which would meet the project purpose, avoid those significant impacts, and save $276 million. If I can boil this case down to the simplest concept I can, petitioners see this as a case about the agency applying the wrong standard of law in the administrative process and failing to follow its own rules. What I'd like to do is focus in on the claim under the AAIA, which I'm just going to use for short to reference Section 49 U.S.C. Section 47106C1B, which is what we focus on in our briefs. First, what's not at issue here? What's not at issue here is any dispute that alternative B1B is a major runway extension and that it causes significant environmental impacts. The FAA in the final environmental impact statement concluded in particular that that alternative would cause noise levels to be raised to such a high level that for more than 1,000 homes, FAA regulations say it's inconsistent or incompatible with residential use. There's also no dispute that alternative C1 would maintain the average annual operational delays below 6 minutes in operation in the year 2020, which was the central element of the statement of purpose and need identified early in the administrative process, and that that alternative would avoid the significant environmental impacts of alternative B1B, and that it could be built and save $276 million.
On C1, avoiding the environmental impacts, as I understand it, at least at one point we have a finding that essentially the same number of acres are at stake, except that for B1B there's 15 acres of mangrove, which is not the case for C1. And then we have a footnote relating to C1 says, well, it's sort of an unexplored alternative that possibly these injuries could be eliminated. Anyone explore those alternatives?
Yes, Your Honor. This is what I think the record is on the wetlands. I think there's no dispute that alternative B1B would require the use of wetlands. Not all of the 15 acres are mangrove wetlands, by the way. I think it's like three or four as the actual mangroves. The rest are freshwater wetlands. The issue was an alternative and B1B uses the wetlands because it extends the runway into the wetlands east of the airport. Alternative C1 is built entirely on the existing airport property, and to build C1, the runway and taxiways and the navigational aids, there is no need to use any wetlands. The issue is that Broward County, in defining the alternative for purposes of analysis, had to relocate facilities, which is where the footprint of C1 is, and they made a choice to in their planning to show that those facilities would be moved into wetlands. And what we did in the administrative process is we submitted a report by an expert basically saying you don't need to move those facilities into wetlands. And in the record of decision, the FAA acknowledged that we may be right, but they had never gone out to analyze it. So I believe that's the state of the record, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think the issue here is it boils down to whether alternative C1 is quote-unquote prudent. And we believe that the FAA misapplied the legal standard in the ROD. Now, the meaning of prudent is established in two ways from our perspective. First, by the Supreme Court in Overton Park, and second, by FAA's own order. Let me just briefly talk about the Supreme Court. In 1971, in the Overton Park decision, the court construed the word prudent in two different statutes. It did it under Section 4F of the Transportation Act of 1966, and it did under the Federal Highway Act of 1968. And it recognized that prudent would encompass a wide variety of actions. So if the agency is going to find that something's not prudent, that there must be some extraordinary, unique, or unusual factor. And it specifically rejected the idea that prudent allows the agency to engage in some wide-ranging balancing of factors simply to identify what it prefers. We think that the structure of the AAIA indicates that prudent has the same meaning under that law as under Section 4F of the Transportation Act and the Federal Highway Act. And
you have two circuits against you, do you not?
Your Honor, I'm not so sure that that's true, actually.
Second and eighth?
Well, actually, I guess I would ask what specific aspect of it. The Second Circuit, if you're referring to the NRDC versus FAA case, that case actually, the holding of that case was that the term prudent allows for evaluation of non-environmental factors, and that's not an issue in this case. So I think that that's a separate issue. And I think
the reasoning went a good deal farther, though, in terms of comparing AAIA with
DOT.
4F.
Right. Your Honor, I think that I guess I focus on the holding, which was focused on environmental versus non-environmental factors. Well, let me turn, though, Your Honor, to let me answer this in a different way, if I could. And let me focus on what the agency itself did, because our case is largely based upon what the FAA has interpreted prudent to mean. They issued Order 5050.4B, and it construes prudent both in the context of Section 4F of the Transportation Act and the AAIA. It defines prudent as rationale judgment. That's the definition phrase it uses for both statutes. Okay, and it refers for both statutes to the same seven set of factors. The first factor is, does it meet the purpose and need? And factors 2 through 7 are the extraordinary, unusual, or unique factors. So, and Your Honor, I just wanted to focus on that point. The FAA uses the language of Overton Park in its own order construing the term prudent.
My recollection is, though, that it draws a distinction between how the factors apply with respect to AAIA and how they apply with respect to 4F. With respect to AAIA, they observe simply these factors may be useful, which is pretty broad.
Okay, well, Your Honor, I would acknowledge that that is the language it says about the factors, but looking at the order, we think it actually it does not identify two completely different standards or meanings of the term prudent. It defines prudent as referring to rationale judgment. So this, I'm looking at the record at page 109.
What does that mean, rationale judgment? Is it a typo or a thinko?
You know, Your Honor.
They do it repeatedly, so it's probably
Your
not
Honor,
a typo.
I've seen that phrase repeated in FA documents over the years. I really have no idea what it means. It's not rational judgment.
I feel better now.
Right. It's not rational judgment. It's rationale judgment. But more importantly than that, you look at the Overton Park case, it expressly said this isn't like a rational judgment kind of analysis, that prudence sets it of a high bar. If something's imprudent, you have to show that there's something extraordinarily wrong with it. So I think that phrase is very strange. But I will say, though, that the FAA, in its own order, 5054B, defines prudent refers to rationale judgment. It says that for the AAIA and Section 4F. And, Your Honor, the way I read this order is they identify the factors to be considered under 4F, which is the older statute, which is they had those identified, I think, before the AI was even passed. And instead of writing them twice, they're simply referring over to those that they're useful. So, Your Honor, I think, and frankly, let's just talk about the structure of the law. And I'm going to jump back here for a moment to the Supreme Court's interpretation in Overton Park. It would be an incongruous result to have the word prudent mean completely different things in two different statutes that apply to the same administrative department, and that is the Department of Transportation, that use the same words, prudent and feasible, and obviously feasible changed to possible in a recodification of the AAIA, but that's not an issue in this case. It is that the statutes have the same structure, so because they address transportation projects causing environmental impacts of one sort or another, And they have this...
Isn't that a significant distinction, that 4F relates to one very specific, presumably not occurring all the time, environmental impact?
Your Honor, I think it's not important for this case, because this case turns on whether an alternative is prudent or not. That language is the same. Here's the difference. The AIA in Section 4F, AIA is both broader and more narrow. It's broader in that it covers more environmental impacts than just the use of parks. It covers almost any environmental impact identified by the agency, and we're accepting their finding that there's significant environmental impacts. However, the AIA applies to a smaller category of agency actions. It only applies to three things: a new airport, a new runway, or a major runway extension. Whereas 4F applies to any transportation action that would use a park. So in that sense, 4F is a broader statute. That's why I think actually if you look at Order 5050.4B, they say that it's similar because the term prudent is the same, the meaning of that is the same, but the statutes are not identical because they have greater or lesser reach depending upon the specific issue. So, Your Honor, the idea that you would have that these two statutes where the term prudent has completely different meanings here and are applied in a completely different way in these two statutes, we think is incongruous. And in particular, I just want to point out, let's just remember the history of these laws. Overton Park comes out in 1971. The AIA is passed 11 years later in 1982. And we cite the cases that there's a presumption that if Congress uses the same word consistently, that it uses the same word in different statutes, it does so consistently. And that would make sense here where you have statutes that the structure is the same, aimed at the same agency. Why would they mean something differently?
And what's your answer to the reasons the Second Circuit gave for believing that that's just what happened?
Well, Your Honor, I guess my response to it is this, is I think you need to defer to the FAA's formal interpretation of the term prudent. I go back to the basic principles of statutory interpretation and deference. In Order 5050.4B, they promulgated that through
note. That's not the statute, though.
I understand
Second
that.
The Second Circuit was actually interpreting the statutes.
I understand that, Your Honor. But I just would say is that if the agency here, through formal notice and comment procedures, has interpreted the term prudent, unless that's clearly wrong, I think you should defer to it. And what we're relying upon is not the arguments made in the government's brief. Our position is based upon their formal orders, which is what's entitled to deference.
Well, the sequence, as I understand it at least, is this. You have the two statutes are in place. Well, actually, is 5050, yeah, is 5050 is put out after the second statute, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. I believe actually what they do is they renumber the orders every time they reissue it. So 5050 has been there, but 0.4, 0.4A, 4B, I believe 0.4 may have come out in 1980. I'm not sure. I think there's a reference to that in the NRDC case in the footnote. But
so we have the statute involved in Overton Park, which is 4F, and then Order 5050 with this gloss, then the DOT, the AAIA, which is meant to expedite things, then the Second Circuit saying the statutes have different reach or different, pardon me, one allows more balancing of other factors where the other does not. That seems not to have been in the FAA's brief. That seems to have been the Second Circuit's original contribution here.
Right.
But now the FAA has adopted that position, and it's not just in their brief. They're now relying on the Second Circuit.
Well, I think it's just, I don't see it in their order, though. I mean, if they promulgate an order through notice and comment rulemaking, they can change their interpretation, they can change the rule, but they have to do it through notice and comment rulemaking. They don't get to simply ignore it or to try to change, is this a new rulemaking in the form of an appellate brief?
So you think that they're not within the protection of the deference we give for the agency interpreting its own rule?
Well, correct, Your Honor. I think, actually, we would say you should defer to their formal interpretation in the order, which is we think is a binding rule.
Order 5050.
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, you say it's formal, but it's informal rulemaking by APA standards, right?
Well,
notice and comment rulemaking.
It was notice and comment rulemaking, correct.
It was an on-the-record hearing rulemaking.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
Informal rulemaking.
That's correct, but it's still a rule. So, and so we would argue that the court owes no deference to a position that they advance in their brief if it's inconsistent with their underlying rule. And we think that that's an important distinction.
And you're saying the rule cannot be interpreted by the FAA, you know, with all the deference that they get interpreting their own rules, all the way back to Udall against Tolman, as having a different meaning in different contexts.
Well, I think the standard is, and
I said it's useful to carry this over, right, in 50-50.
Okay, I'm not sure I got that last.
What is it in the order that we can focus on and say that requires a consistent interpretation of the word prudent?
They define the term in the same way, rationale, judgment, whatever that means.
Well, if it means the judgment about the rationale, then it would be contextually contingent.
Okay, but if it applies the same standard, if it's the same definition, and it's undisputed here that for 4F, it means that they have to make a showing of extraordinary or unusual circumstances, the same standard would apply to the AAIA. And the rule, Your Honor, only identifies one set of factors. Okay, it would be what they're basically saying is because the factors are not repeated under both statutes in that rule, that somehow there's a hidden set of factors they didn't bother to identify, but it exists. Okay, we just don't think that works. In Florida, we would say that doesn't pass the straight face test. And so what I would suggest, Your Honor, is that I would point out to the court that in their briefs, they don't try to say that we have misinterpreted the rule beyond simply making this reference to rationale judgment on the AIA but not citing it on 4F and otherwise saying the factors are listed for 4F but we don't list them for the AIA and it simply says useful. Other than that, they haven't attempted to defend this case based on our misinterpretation of that order. Their defense is based upon cases from other circuits, some of which, by the way, are inconsistent with this rule on 4F, which is not an issue here about what the proper meaning of that is. So if that's true, Your Honor, my reaction is that the agency is, in a way, inviting you to disregard its own rule and to de novo interpret the term prudent. We don't understand how that works. We read the agency's rules in the administrative process. Right? They should follow them. That's what this case is about. They should follow their own rules. And if they want to change the definition of prudent, they can do that, but they have to do it the proper way. Now, Your Honor, we think that properly interpreted, if you apply the Overton Park standards to the meaning of the term prudent to the AIA, and as stated in Order 5050.4b, they have their record of decision is arbitrary and capricious. There's no finding of extraordinary problems ever made or of unusual problems of any kind. And when it comes to the issue of purpose, the purpose of this project was clearly defined from the start. It is the quote-unquote purpose and need defined at the start of the project. Not the start of the project, but years before they issued the ROD. And that's what FAA's Order 5050.4b says. Congress says they have to follow purpose and need in special runway capacity projects like this. And that purpose and need identifies a threshold, not a sliding scale, and they make the finding that alternative C1 meets the project purpose. This invention of the overall project purpose at the end of the process in the ROD is just simply, we think, is just proof about how they are trying to justify a predetermined choice and not properly applying the law. I mean, overall project purpose is a phrase from Clean Water Act regulations that govern the Army Corps of Engineers' discharge of dredged and fill material.
Is there any reason to think that's not just a coincidence? I mean, they weren't borrowing from that?
Well, they could have been, even if they were borrowing from it, Your Honor, basis for creating this?
No, I think borrowing from it would be very peculiar. It seems to me it's just a coincidence that you found the same phrase in another statute.
Well, Your Honor, that phrase isn't in our statutes. But let me just say,
you found it in the Clean Water Act, isn't it?
Yeah, but in their brief, they point out the history of it. And the history of it was they were apparently talking to the Army Corps about wetlands, dredge, and fill issues. And this came to their mind, overall project purpose, and that's how the phrase gets used in the ROD. So actually, they were borrowing it from the Clean Water Act, as I read their brief. Your Honor, I see that I have very limited time left, but I think I should reserve whatever time I have left to respond to questions.
Questions at this point? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Robert Stockman, here on behalf of the Federal Aviation Administration. I will endeavor to leave 5 minutes for the airport. This petition for review presents two major issues, both of which should be resolved in favor of the FAA, and I'll start with the question of whether or not alternative C1 is prudent. FAA properly applied its order, which finds that the Section 4F precedent and interpretation is useful but not determinative, is not the final question. Those seven factors are not all-inclusive. I mean, they're not exclusive factors. They're not the only factors to be considered. And here, an accumulation of substantial problems renders alternative C1 imprudent under any standard, under Section 4F, under the AIA.
That would seem to be, acceptable in the Seventh Circuit.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not sure I'm following.
The second Seventh Circuit case seems to say that you can, that even under the Overton Park standard, the accumulation of small problems can qualify.
It's actually acceptable in a wide range of circuits, Your Honor. The Fourth Circuit has found, I believe, in Hickory Park or Hickory Committee. Moreover,
there's nothing in this circuit.
This circuit hasn't yet faced a situation where an accumulation of problems creates the situation. But here, it's worth noting, these arise to a substantial and indeed compelling reason not to select alternative C1. I'd like to start with the fact that alternative C1 creates substantially less capacity, much greater delay. And here, it's worth emphasizing the extent to which it suffers extraordinary delays in poor weather. That's half an hour of delay in east flow operations and 80 minutes of delay in west flow operations. That basically renders it moves incredibly slowly in that context. And that's a magnitude of 10 of delay. That's 10 times the delay you have with alternative B1B. And the Secretary quite reasonably concluded that wasn't a prudent decision. That doesn't fulfill the statutory mandates of the AIA. It would, for consumers and airlines, it leads to extraordinary costs. The estimated difference in benefit causing just from those costs is $200 million by 2030. For alternative B1B. And it's 7% of the time that those extraordinary delays occur. So, for example, 2 full days out of every month, or 25 full days out of every year, you're going to have delays that are 10 times as great with alternative C1. And it would have been arbitrary for FAA to ignore that information.
What was the equivalent factor for no action?
For no action? The no action alternative also does, actually, alternative C1 in poor weather does essentially the same as the no-action alternative, because the distances you need to run the north parallel dependent runway is essentially similar to running just one runway for that time period. So the other thing is, the question is it a prudent alternative compared to B1B? That's the question. Is alternative C1 a prudent alternative in light of the options available to the FAA? And here, the option it's being compared to, is alternative B1B.
Now, prudent isn't inherently a comparative term.
No, but it's...
Both things could be prudent, et cetera. So you're posing the issue as which is more prudent, whether it's prudent in light of the alternative.
I think that must be right, because it says the inquiry is whether it's...
There's nothing in the various expressions of the meaning of prudent to suggest that, is there?
Well, I think that whether or not something is extraordinarily problematic or uniquely problematic has everything to do with the other options available. I mean, the course of action one decides on has to...
Whether something is unique is definitely a comparative issue.
Yes.
Okay, but prudent and unique are not the same thing.
I suppose the language is... No possible and prudent alternative to the project exists. So to select the project adopted, here alternative B1B, the inquiry is there a possible and prudent alternative to B1B? And the question then becomes, is alternative C1 a prudent alternative
to B1B? Suppose there are two prudent options, okay?
Ah, yes. If alternative C1 were to be prudent, then that default becomes that, but it has to be prudent, and whether or not you assess whether it's prudent has to be assessed in terms of what the options are.
But if they're both prudent, the choice between them can't be based on prudence.
But here that's, I suppose, but here alternative C1 isn't prudent. That was the finding of the FAA, and it was a completely reasonable finding in light of these substantial problems with alternative C1. It introduces an unnecessary safety concern.
Well, I thought you were saying a moment ago it isn't prudent when you consider that there's the better alternative available.
Well, I suppose...
But I want to know whether... Now you seem to be saying it. No, it's an absolute matter.
I suppose I'm... I don't know how one would measure it absolutely, Your Honor. I apologize.
Well, assume that things are either prudent or imprudent, okay? And in a particular case, there are two things, either both of which would be prudent. So either choice would be prudent. And yet it would still be a question, which you could put, I don't know what your authority is, for saying, well, which is the more prudent? Or if they're both prudent, which is better for the sponsor?
I think in making a judgment, Your Honor, a judgment is about the options available. The judgment
Are you referring to the rationale judgment now?
Yes, Your Honor. The rational judgment that FAA made, and a judgment that Congress left with the Secretary and FAA in the first instance, a judgment that the court will only reverse upon a showing of clear error, of a true failure to engage in the proper decision-making. And here, FAA, looking to the full statutory mandates of the AIA, concluded that the proper judgment, the correct judgment in this case, was alternative B1B, and that alternative C1 was not a prudent alternative, because it has substantial problems that can be easily avoided with alternative B1B. Alternative C1 involves runway crossings, which increase the risk of the most serious incursions that occur in airports. Half the most serious incursions result from that. Alternative B1B avoids them entirely. Now, whether or not, so occasionally, they may be unavoidable at some airports. But here, they are avoidable. And it would have been imprudent. It would have been arbitrary for FAA not to consider that in assessing which was the prudent alternative.
Well, then why wasn't C denominated imprudent on safety grounds?
It was denominated imprudent on all the grounds, Your Honor.
It was denominated prudent. Is that not right? You just a moment ago said it could be, or maybe it could be prudent, but this one's more prudent.
I did not mean to say that. I thought you were posing hypothetically, Your Honor.
Yeah, I was. You're right.
Yeah, we do not believe alternative C1 is prudent.
No, I understand.
Under any scenario. That is not FAA's position. Alternative C1 is imprudent.
Carry this hypothetical exercise farther. One can imagine a place where the topography is such that one would conclude that C1 was prudent because all the other alternatives are disastrously worse, right? So in that sense, prudent is surely relative.
FAA has to analyze the alternatives available. And so, as you say, if in certain scenarios, there are only so many configurations available.
There's always no action, though.
There is, and that also has to be considered and was fully considered. Even Dania Beach acknowledges that no action is not an alternative here, couldn't be chosen. But yes, no action could be the prudent alternative in some scenarios. Here, this runway is hemmed in by development on all sides, this airport, and wetlands on one remaining side. There are only so many configurations. FAA engaged in an incredibly thorough environmental technical analysis. And it identified the only configurations that are possibly available. And it concluded that alternative B1B was the best alternative, and it concluded that alternative C1 was imprudent for very strong reasons. And this goes directly to the need of FAA to fulfill the statutory mandates under the AIA. Here you have one alternative that basically grinds almost just incredibly slowly in poor weather. And that's completely unpredictable for consumers, for airlines. It introduces an avoidable safety issue, which can be addressed, but in turn, addressing runway crossings introduces further delay. And on top of all of that, it does foreclose all future development at this airport. But this case, in many ways, is very similar to City of Bridgeton, which was a Section 4F case, where the Eighth Circuit upheld FAA's judgment that an alternative very similar, almost as factually similar as one could imagine with an airport, was imprudent, because of this very problem of dependent runways performing very poorly in poor weather. And that was in poor weather there was only 6% of the time as opposed to 7%. So here, FAA made the prudent judgment.
Which was that? Which field was that?
That's City of Bridgeton. It involves Lambert Airport.
Lambert. Okay. That's St. Louis, isn't it?
That's it is St. Louis, Your Honor. And it's a similar size. They're both large hubs. That has the 14th most departures in the country at the time. FAA, Fort Lauderdale currently has the 21st most departures at the time. And it simply is the case that just as it was imprudent to select that alternative at Lambert, it was imprudent to select alternative C1 here. The only difference that they can point to distinguish the two cases is here FAA decided to research and consider alternative C1 thoroughly through the full NEPA process, performed a complete and total analysis, which, if anything, made FAA's performance here even more reasonable than it was in that instance.
Super reasonable.
Super reasonable. Couldn't be more thorough, Your Honor. Finally, I'd like to just turn to the issue of the area they described as Brooks Park, which FAA identified as not a Section 4F property. FAA's conclusion is clearly reasonable on this record. The contact of Broward County asked, what's the situation with this land? Broward County responded, it's a parking lot with benches on it from which people view airplanes. It was being used illegally by taxis and limousines, so we closed it down. We moved the benches. We've never considered it a park. FAA considered that factual record and agreed with it. And FAA then circulated a map depicting all the Section 4F properties. And Dania Beach's Department of Parks and Resources did not respond and say, oh, you're missing this. You're missing this park. They did not respond to that. Moreover, there isn't a single comment from a person who ever actually has used this park in any administrative record. There's no evidence that one would expect with a Section 4F property that someone who actually had used it might arise. There might have been photographs. There would have been any sort of evidence that could have been introduced. All we have is a handful of stray comments in our letter saying, well, at one time, you thought this might be a Section 4F resource. And I would just like to draw out that the one pin site they provided, one of the most extensive discussions, which is all of two sentences, it says, Brooks Park is a park. They provide a pin site to the first supplemental draft EIS. The place I'm talking about is in the joint appendix at 679. That pin site then takes you to the supplemental appendix 670, where FAA, in the prior NEPA process, which we terminated for a variety of reasons, says this isn't a Section 4F property. Thus, the only place they provided an actual pin site that would have directed our attention, FAA's attention, to evidence for why this might be a Section 4F property is a supplemental draft EIS where FAA said this isn't a Section 4F property. So on this record, there's just no question this is not a Section 4F property.
I'd just like to take up an issue that opposing counsel stressed, and that is the proposition that the FAA, in fact, considered the AAIA standard the same as the 4F standard. Now, you presumably claim differently. Your claim that it's different, apart from the argument as to why it should be different, is based on the proposition that when Order 5050 is talking about AAIA, it says the definition for 4F is very useful, whereas in talking about 4F, it says use the following factors.
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I right? Is there some other distinction that I should look for?
And I would also, I think I would like to emphasize that petitioner's characterization of our argument is not the argument FAA is making. Our contention is not that they are completely different.
I understand that.
The order makes it very clear that Section 4F process is useful, is quite useful in doing the analysis. And we concur, but there are slight differences in the statutes. There, in significant ways, both in the type of test being applied, the structure, the fact that the AIA is part of a much larger statute that in turn identifies a number of policies that Congress wanted FAA to consider. And so our position is that we were consistent with our order. The Section 4F is different, but our position is certainly not that it's completely different. We do believe it was very useful. The FAA followed the orders, and our decision is completely defensible under the orders. There's an accumulation of substantial problems with alternative C1 that renders it imprudent. Moreover, it's notable that FAA can point to numerous Section 4F cases where alternatives with similar problems were rejected as imprudent, and the courts upheld them. I mean, City of Bridgeton is the most factually on point, but we cited several other in our brief. Whereas Dania Beach's entire argument is based on the dicta from Overton Park, which obviously is important. Nonetheless, it's an incredibly factually different case. In that case, there was no evidence the Secretary had made any determination at all about what regarded prudence. That couldn't be more different than this situation, where the Secretary thoroughly considered the alternatives and only rejected alternative C1 as imprudent on the basis that after doing this kind of thorough analysis that showed it had these substantial problems and failed to fulfill the statutory mandates of the AIA. I'd like to just quickly discuss an issue that came up at the end of Mr. McAlealy's argument, and that went to the overall project purposes. In doing the 11990 and wetlands analysis in the FEIS, FAA considered 11990, and they also considered whether a 404 permit would be issued by the Corps of Engineers, and they maintained contact with them. And there is a discussion in the FEIS of whether this meets the Section 404, the 404 permit standard. But in the end, FAA, at each time it applied the actual standard, in 11990, it identifies the correct standard as the one laid out in the DOT order. It discusses whether it's practicable. Our conclusion was completely consistent with the order laying out how to do that. And then in the AIA section, it identified the correct standard. It's whether or not it's prudent, and the analysis is completely consistent with those orders. So the fact that we also used a phrase doesn't really change the analysis whatsoever.
No further questions.
Seeing no further questions,
thank you, Mr. Stark.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
May it please the Court, I'm Michael Schneiderman. I represent the airport. I'm not sure I'm in the same case with everybody else. I'm here to respond to arguments that were made for the first time in the reply brief on jurisdiction and standing, because it's our position that the Court does not have jurisdiction and the petitioners don't have standing to raise either the AAIA or the executive order claims. The airport needs two main things, in order to build the runway. It needs money, and it needs an approved airport layout plan. As to money, we say in our brief where the money will come from if there is no federal grant. And it says that the principal source will be charges paid by airport users, landing fees, terminal rents, things of that sort. That's where most airports get most of their money anyway. That's uncontested. It's on page 9 of our brief. It is not mentioned in the petitioner's reply brief. If we're right that the first and third claims, the AAIA and the executive order claims, are only about grants, then there's no redressability and no Article III standing, even if the Court finds that the FAA's grant actions are final under 46110. We have an approved airport layout plan, but airport layout plans are not approved under the only section, AAIA section, in which the claim is made. The claim is made under 47106, which is about new grants for new projects. Airport layout plans are covered by a different section under which there is no claim, 47107A16. That's about contractual commitments that airports make to protect the federal investment in grants already made. 47107 has what this Court in the Bensonville case called operating standards. Operating standards are very different from standards, policy standards, for approving new grants. The law is reasonably clear on this, but if it weren't, I would refer you to the legislative history of 47106C, which says it is only about grants. That's at 1982 U.S. Code, Congressional and Administrative News, 1178. The record of decision in this case also clearly separates the grant action under 47106 from the ALP action under 47107. At the place at the beginning of the record of decision, where the FAA says what it is doing, it says FAA approval of an ALP, footnote 47107A16, comma, and then environmental determinations and other things about grants, footnote 47106C. That's at Joint Appendix 820. At the end of the ROD, where we get to the decisions and orders part of the record of decision, at Joint Appendix 904, the FAA, when it says what its decisions and orders are, refers right back to Joint Appendix 820. So it's the FAA, in issuing the ROD in this case, is only talking about grants under 47106, and is talking about these operating standards, if we use the Bensonville case formulation, under 47107. 5050.4B has come up this morning. That is the order that governs the FAA's processing of environmental processing of new projects. That order at Joint Appendix 109 says, takes the language of 47106C and applies it only to grants. The 47107G directs the Secretary of Transportation to prescribe requirements for compliance with all those assurances, all those contractual assurances in 47107, including the ALP assurance. And that's done in FAA Order 5190.6B, which has page after page after page of standards for airport layout plan approval, never once referring to, citing, making any mention of a standard under 47106. Also, if in that order, 5190.6B, the FAA actually directly addresses the question of the relationship between ALP approval and grant approval. And at pages 229 to 231 of that order, it says there is no relationship. It's in Q&A format. What do you have when you have an ALP approval? What don't you have? And it answers that question by saying what you don't have is a grant.
So you don't need the ALP approval.
You need ALP approval in order to build the project, and we have that. You need approval under 47106 for a grant. But this record of decision makes no grant. It's a long way from a grant in this record of decision.
You have your airport layout approval?
Yes.
Prior to this ruling? Prior to the order under
the record of decision does several things. One of the things it does, and it does it separately from the grant actions, is to approve the airport layout plan showing the project. And that is all we need from a regulatory perspective to build the project.
That's in the order under review.
Yes. It's the FAA says at Joint Appendix 820, FAA approval of an ALP.
I'm not following the argument. You need the approval. You got the approval.
Yes.
Why wouldn't overturning the order then redress the injury to claimed by the
Because claim? The only claim that is made in this case with respect to that order is a claim with respect to the FAA's action as to a grant, and there is no grant. There is no
action,
claim in...
What action did they take relevant to a grant if there's no grant?
They made a preliminary determination of eligibility. Mm-hmm. They go out of their way to say, this is not a commitment for a grant.
The objections that we're hearing from the city seem to go very, to the city of Dania, seem to go very much to the question of the layout.
That's correct, Your Honor, but they did not claim in this court under either the AAIA or the executive order. They made no claim as to the approval of the ALP under the statutory standards for ALP approval. They could have. They didn't. They chose to make a claim only under a grant standard and then say that an ALP to be approved has to satisfy not just the standards for ALP approval under the statute, 47107A16, which has a standard in it, but also has to satisfy the standards for grants. But that's not how it works. That's not what the legislative history says. That's not what the order says.
Could have. I'm not sure what you meant by that.
To attack the airport layout plan, which is the thing we need to build with or without a grant,
right.
They had to make a claim under some provision that applies to airport layout plan approval. They did not.
I'm sorry, but then you said they could have...
They
could have connected the ALP approval to AAIA and the executive order?
No, Your Honor. ALP approval is under 47107A16. They could have made a claim under that section.
I see. You're saying there are other sections in the statute that they haven't invoked at all.
Yes. Or they could have sued under NEPA. They could have made a claim under the Clean Air Act. Who knows?
Okay.
But all they claimed was under the grant standard of 47106. And that is only about grants, as all of the references which I have cited say. That's what this court has said in the Bensonville case. The court has it right in the Bensonville case. It has the sequence of events, ALP approval, then grant actions. That's at 457 F3rd at page 58. That's how this process works. They are separate decisions under separate standards, which are adopted by Congress for separate reasons. And the attempt to mix them up here.
I guess you're also saying that without the eligibility for a grant, the project would go forward anyway.
Yes.
And what's the record on that?
The record on that, to start with, is a standing question. They have the burden of showing that we couldn't proceed, that it's likely that the project would not proceed, and they haven't given us anything on that. But the rest of the record on that is that airports, that what we said in our brief is that airports rely routinely, and we cite an FAA order for this, routinely rely on user charges for paying their expenses, including retiring bonds that are used to pay for projects like this. That's uncontested. They have said nothing to contest that. We have an FAA order that says that's one of the places airports get their money. And I think that...
In addition, you have a finality theory as to the grants. Right?
Yes, Your Honor. What we've been talking about has to do with redressability. Article 3 standing. There is also a 46110 question about standing. The FAA has made a determination about eligibility for a grant, but as I say, that's a long way from a grant.
That's the finality argument.
That's the finality argument, and that's only applies to jurisdiction under 46110. We are also saying that even if there is 46110 finality and jurisdiction, there is still no Article 3 standing.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Schneider.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I think I do need to address the issue of standing here. First, I think it's not correct that there is a record of evidence before the court that if this court were to overturn the ROD and the FAA would be unable to get 25% of their expected funding, $200 million that they would come up with another source of money. All we have is assertions of counsel in their brief and an argument that is not proof. This case is very distinguishable from the cases they rely upon, the Chicago cases, Bensonville and St. John's, because there was a record of financial contingency plannings. We'd also pointed out in our brief...
Wait, let me make sure I understand this. Mr. Schneiderman was saying that the airport would go forward, or at least as far as the record shows, the airport would go forward, and you're saying it would not?
The record doesn't show that. What we have is a financial plan that shows 25% of the funding coming from federal grants. There is no contingency plan that if that money's taken away that they could get it from another source and that they would get it from another source. And here's the important point, Your Honor. If you look at the Chicago cases, Bensonville and St. John's United, that evidence was in the record. So what happened was is that the airport rebutted it in those cases, and then the petitioner couldn't overcome the rebuttal. We don't have the rebuttal in our case, and so that's an important factual distinction. And I want to emphasize, FAA made the redressability finding for us in the ROD. We cite to that in our brief, but basically, and I'll just draw the court's attention to this is at 904, the joint appendix, quote, not approving these agency actions would prevent Broward County from proceeding with implementation of alternative B1B. And then the agency actions is a list of them, starts with the grants, second is the airport layout plan. So it's very broad language. It doesn't just say the airport layout plan.
The contention is that the aspects of the reasoning, justification that you're challenging are aspects that have no legal connection with the approval of the ALP.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
I
think that's clearly wrong. If you look at section 47106C, which is the basis of our AIA claim, it says it applies to any application under this subchapter for a major runway extension. Okay? It's not limited to grants. If you look at subsections 47106A, there's a reference to grants. If you look at B, there's a reference to grants. C, there's no reference to grants. And we cite the cases. If Congress uses terms in one subsection and omits it in another, they mean that there is a difference. Okay, so then you focus on what is an application under the subchapter. You go over to the very next section of the AIA. That's 47107, and A16 talks about the airport layout plans. So the requirement that we are focused on is not limited to grants. I found it to be a very confusing and tortured line of reasoning from counsel just now. Maybe I'm just tired and need more coffee at this point. But I focus on the very clear language here of what the statute says. We think our reading of this, by the way, is entirely consistent with this court's decision in the town of Stratford, Connecticut versus FAA, because there the court goes through each subsection, and there's a claim under subsection A. The focus there is on grants, and they point out the grants haven't been issued. There's a claim under B. Again, there's a focus on grants. But then when this court gets to C, there's no reference to grants. They're clearly focused on the airport layout plan. You know, and there's also a logical fallacy, Your Honor. Just because there are other legal requirements for an airport layout plan found in this other section of the AIA, 47107, doesn't mean that this legal requirement doesn't apply as well. I mean, they readily admit NEPA applies to that decision. There's no reference to NEPA in 47106. 4F applies to it. You know, that decision, there's a lot of federal law that would apply to that decision, including the standards under 47106C. So that's we pay attention to the language in the statute. What I'd like to now, I just want to make two last points, unless you need more on the standing issue.
You want to hear more on standing?
Counsel, just going back to 47106C, the opening paragraph, the Secretary may approve an application under this subchapter for an airport development project. Mm-hmm. And your contention is that in context we know that that means independent of grants.
It means more than just grants. And here's what if you have the statute in front of you, Your Honor.
I have 47106C in front of me.
Okay, well, if you were to go up to B, I'll just read it to you. Here's what 47106B says. The Secretary may approve an application under the subchapter for airport development project grant. You go up to subsection A, here's what it says, 47106A. The Secretary of Transportation may approve an application under the subchapter for a project grant. So those prior subsections, they say grants, this one they don't. What does that mean? Basic principle of statutory interpretation. Congress uses the term in one place and omits it in the next, they mean that there's a difference. And what is the difference here? This section applies to any approval under the subchapter, and that includes the airport layout plan. And as Judge Ginsburg, as you asked the question, and I think the answer was from counsel, yes, they cannot go forward without an airport layout plan. And, Your Honor, that's why, if you put this together, the FAA made the finding for us in the ROD. Without this, the actions approved in the ROD, they can't go forward. And there's a list of them there. So it includes the ALP. So if we prevail in our case and the court were to vacate the ROD, Broward County cannot go forward, no matter what the source of money is that they come up with. So we think that the standing issue is, we just think that this is, we don't think there's any merit to this at all, because we're just basing it on what Congress wrote in the statute. You know, I want to just make two final points on other matters. Number one, Your Honor, Judge Ginsburg, in response to your pointing out about the Second and the Seventh Circuit, I would just point out that we read this court's decision in Citizens Against Burlington to say that the prudent and feasible portion of the AIA is congruent with the prudent and feasible portion of Section 4F. We cite that in our brief, and that's something that I neglected to point out to you. So we have precedent in this circuit. And second, I just want to close with this, Your Honor. Congress circumscribed the FAA's discretion here to approve a major runway extension if there is a significant environmental impact, if there are other alternatives that would meet the project purpose and avoid those impacts. Okay. In this case, the FAA found that alternative B1B will expose more than 1,000 families to noise levels in their houses that FAA says that they shouldn't live there, incompatible with residential use. Basically, think about this in context, the facts of this case. Congress is saying, if you're going to do that to all of those people and you have another alternative that's going to meet the project purpose, then there needs to be a very good reason not to pick that alternative. And all the FAA has advanced here is that in 7% of the time in bad weather, you'll have delays at this airport like you have today. You know, for somebody who flies in and out of that airport to sit a little longer, is that outweigh the effects on 1,000 people? Congress gave them that choice. Safety issues. That runway configuration exists at other major airports around America. And here's the bottom line. FAA found that it's safe. That's the finding. So they didn't make any findings of extraordinary, unusual, or unique problems. Congress circumscribed their discretion. They don't just get a free rein on this. The choice is made. So, Your Honor, we would respectfully ask the court to grant our petition. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. McLeod. Mr. Stockman, Mr. Schneiderman, thank you all. The case is submitted. Thank you.
Officer